But we have to.
Ready?
Good morning, everyone. We will call to order the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. Someone here to take the roll.
Senator Althoff, Representative Burke, Representative Davidsmeyer,
here.
Senator Kaler, Representative Moffitt,
here.
Representative Nekritz, Representative Riley, Senator Rose, Senator Staines,
here.
Senator Severson,
here.
Senator Trotter,
here.
Representative Eunice.
Seven.
Thank you very much. We have a quorum present, and we shall proceed. 1 second. Co-Chairman Moffitt would like to make an announcement.
Thank you, Senator Trotter, co-chairman. At one point, it was indicated that there would be a vote on the proposed closure of the Kewanee Juvenile Justice Facility. That will not occur today. That will occur May 3rd, room C1 at 9:30. So if anyone was wondering about Kewanee, that is scheduled, that vote, May 3rd, 9:30, room C1 in Stratton. Public comment is still open. I think it would be inappropriate to have any votes prior to public comment closing. So that's why, if anyone had that down, you know that's why it's been changed. With that, turn it back to Senator Trotter.
Thank you, sir. We have a full agenda today. Full, but doesn't necessarily have to be overly long. If we, again, be succinct in our answers or in your comments, we appreciate it as we go forward. Today we'll be talking about the liabilities of the State Employees Group Health Insurance Program, and there are a couple of actionable items which we'll be voting on at the end of testimony. So to begin with, if we could, we'll be talking about the renewed and amended contracts for 2017. Basically, we'll have CMS come up first and give a presentation. Yes, please add Representative Nekritz to the roll call, please. Good morning. Just identify yourselves, and if you do not or have not filled out witness slips, I would like to ask you to do so. Want to begin?
Thank you, Chairman Trotter, Chairman Moffitt, members of the Commission. My name is Mike Hoffman. I'm the Acting Director of Department of Central Management Services, and I'm joined here on my left by Mike Mannion, our new Deputy Director for the Bureau of Benefits, as well as on the right by Marsha Armstrong, who is our financial analyst for that same bureau. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about the Group Health Insurance Plan. As you know, this plan has been underfunded for years and has resulted in a very large bill backlog that is approaching $2.9 billion and is growing at a rate of $200 million a month. In addition, in accordance with the Prompt Payments Act and the Timely Payments Act, we owe $176 million in interest payments, which is also growing and is projected to reach around $261 million by the end of this fiscal year. We're happy to have a discussion and answer any questions you may have about these liabilities as well as the way forward. Thank you.
So enough questions from the members. Going forward, sir, I would. One, we're looking at our analysis and the maintenance budget for the group health insurance, that it was at $1.8 billion, and the governor's recommended budget was $1.4 billion for FY17. How do you reduce those costs going for that $400 million?
So I'll defer to Marsha on the specific numbers, but I can tell you that we're taking a very comprehensive approach and trying to be as efficient and effective as we can, given the limited tools we have available. We were able to find $196 million in savings through negotiations with our various vendors, as well as through a dependents eligibility verification audit and other administrative measures. We will continue to try and find some of those savings. Some of those are one-time savings, other ones will recur, and we can get into the details of that. In addition, we are looking at program design and plan design, which is currently under a pause right now as we wait for some discussions with the Labor Relations Board as well as AFSCME to come to a conclusion. But we're looking at a number of different ways to realize those additional savings.
Okay. Marcia, good morning.
Good morning. Marcia Armstrong, financial analyst at Bureau of Benefits. Our appropriations through GOMB reflect a targeted savings of about $715 million, and that's been carried forward from FY16. It was approximately 20% of our overall group insurance liabilities as projected last year. As the director mentioned, we've already achieved some savings, some ongoing and some one-time savings from that FY16 original projection. And the balance of those savings are targeted to be a mix of collective bargaining items and then additional items outside of collective bargaining, such as working with our vendors to improve network discounts, maybe looking at centers of excellence. We have a menu of options of savings items that we can work with our vendors more closely on as well outside of collective bargaining.
Sure. You're looking at these savings, but your liabilities are exacerbated because when on top of your regular liability are these interest payments, as mentioned by the director, what, $230 million and another projected going forward, another $230 going into 2017. So how do you correct that?
So I'll take that, Senator, if you don't mind. Initially, the interest liability is not a new thing. Between 2013 and 2015, we were paying $220 million a year in this interest. We at CMS can do nothing about the requirements of the Prompt Payment Act and the Timely Payment Act, and we are managing it to the best of our ability. Our intent is to find these savings, and frankly, we're going to need to chip away at some of those outstanding liabilities that have been out there for years, and it'll take us a little bit of time to resolve those. We won't be able to do it all in one year.
Well, I'm not one to ask for specifics. I know this is not a specific business. However, what do you call a little bit of time?
Well, I think the backlog has been created over multiple years, started back at least 6, 7, 8 years ago, and it may take that long to dig out of it. In the meantime, our intention is to live within our appropriation year to year and find those savings. And ideally, once we get out of this current crisis and we can start chipping away at that backlog, working very carefully and strategically with our vendors, with our partners, to, as Marcia said, do some innovative things that will actually save additional money. Other states have done this. New Jersey has recently found a way where they project they will save a good portion, somewhere around 20% of their group health insurance budget. We're looking at what other states are doing. But right now, unfortunately, we have to focus the majority of our attention on this current crisis and the current fiscal year appropriation.
Well, and the current situation, man, you are still in the middle of negotiations, so I'm certainly that gives you a little unclarity on how to go forward. So have you factored in what you, besides what you propose or what you think is really going to happen?
Well, we are waiting for...
Because it's awfully hard to do benefit changes as a consequence.
We're waiting on the Labor Relations Board to make a ruling. It would be inappropriate for us to forecast what that ruling will be. And so there are a lot of unknowns. We're in an unprecedented time with both the lack of a contract with AFSCME as well as the lack of a budget. And so, unfortunately, I don't want to evade any questions, but we don't know until we have some more clarity on those two main variables how we're going to respond. I can commit to you that we will respond in the most appropriate and responsible way for the taxpayer and the citizens of Illinois, and we will abide by any executed and ratified contract, any applicable law and rule that applies. Other than that, we have to wait and see how these things play out. We are making contingency plans. However, There are too many contingencies for us to really consider at this time. So we're watching as carefully and as closely as I'm sure all of you are, as well as the members of the public.
Representative Davis-Meyer.
Thank you for being here today. You mentioned dependent verification. Have you had issues with people not responding and then trying to get back on through the verification process? Basically not responding or not responding correctly and then having to put people back on?
We have, and we took a very exhaustive approach to communicating with all the members. We communicated with them via multiple means, multiple times. There was warnings when people did not respond, multiple warnings that were sent out and verified. There were some cases where errors were made, and to the greatest extent, we tried to treat each of those case by case. But yes, there was, as you would expect on an endeavor of this size, there were some cases where folks did not reply or did not reply correctly. And again, as I mentioned, we treat those on a case-by-case basis on their merits. Okay. And evaluate what the best thing to do for the program as well as for the members are.
Yep, thank you. Also, as the age increases for dependents staying on their parents' insurance through the ACA, has that affected our number of dependents that are staying on with their parents?
Yes, it has. Our dependent numbers went up primarily in our 2-plus categories, where we may have already had 2 dependents on the plan, mm-hmm. and we added another dependent. We didn't have to verify any longer that they were full-time students. I can get you specific numbers, but yes, most definitely our dependent roles went up. They actually went up prior to ACA because we actually implemented increased dependent ages prior to that. So our numbers actually ramped up about a year earlier than ACA law.
So why did we do that early?
I believe it was under Governor Blagojevich at that time. I think it was an executive order.
Okay. All right. Also, when we get to when we're talking about the savings that we're expecting to receive through the collective bargaining process, we know where it's at. Obviously, it's at the Labor Relations Board. So are we assuming savings that that may not be there?
We are planning as if we are going to be able to implement these plans this year. That is definitely our position, is that we will be able to implement these plans at some point. However, we certainly cannot presuppose the outcome of the Labor Relations Board.
Have you sent out RFPs for the planned health care?
We have.
Have you sent out a contingent RFP for if something comes back from the Labor Relations Board other than what you're expecting?
What we've done is we've worked with our existing vendors, and we've solicited bids from our HMO vendors in particular to look at what the different actuarial value plans would be bid at. And then for our self-insured plans, we will work with Deloitte, our actuary, to estimate the savings from the different actuarial values. So we know and we can plan around total rates, and then we'll have to wait for the cost sharing percentages that are worked through collective bargaining to determine the split between the two.
So if things don't come back as planned, what are we talking about extra cost?
Well, at status quo level, that's where we're at right now. That's where we have our rates set, and that's our benefit choice period is based on our status quo plans. Depending on the different levels of cost sharing, the amount could be, you know, in the up to $400 million, and okay. Based on the level, the ultimate level that's decided by collective bargaining.
Okay. Thank you.
Lita Severson.
Just a couple questions on the with the rate with the changes of different carriers doing different rate structures for dependents, even though required to cover dependents to 26, but on the private side, the carriers that are charging a different rate for dependents that are over 21 versus under 21. Are any of our care, are we doing, is that, again, would that be something that's a bargain then as well? And have we looked at that concept where I think most of the private carriers have thrown out the three-person limit when you have dependents that are over 21 and then they have a different rate for over 21 than under 21. Has that been looked at or discussed at all?
Currently, our rates are averaged over the entire population, so we look at the rates up to 26. So we have not carved that out. We actually were looking at things more in the reign of a family plan. If you had, you know, instead of 2+, that we would expand maybe a category for family. So we were looking more in that arena, but had not considered breaking out a separate rate based on dependent age.
Because sometimes with the dependent cost over when you're charging basically an adult rate for over 21 for those dependents, you find at that point some of those dependents who may be working or have access to other coverages too, would you'd see more migration out of that. But again, maybe a concept. And also, do we have, as many private companies have gone to the game plan of if your spouse has coverage where they work at, then they can't be on the employer's plan, or there's a surcharge to be on the employer's plan. Have we looked at that at all? I mean, obviously, a working spouse is that's a liability of her employer, not shouldn't be the state's obligation. So, have we looked at any kind of structuring of those rates at all?
We have looked at a surcharge if your spouse has coverage, and also a smoking surcharge was another option. Those would be subject to collective bargaining because those amounts would differ, and we would have to bargain that. But what we had proposed was a labor committee where we could get together and work on future improvements where both the employer and the employee would save money so we could reduce our overall liability. And those were some options that we had considered and discussed with Deloitte as we work through collective bargaining, just our proposals.
Because that would be a significant savings on the spousal issue. And so as opposed to if there's a choice of cutting benefits for active employees to try to make things work, aren't we better off instead of taking that savings from those whose spouses can get coverage elsewhere, so we don't have to reduce or hurt the benefits? So I would think, given a choice with dealing with even with labor, that they would prefer to have not give up as much benefits on the employee side and have that and have the spousal waiver as well. And obviously, the smoking issue would be another. A good change, at least to some degree, maybe not to the fullest extent that the private side does, but any kind of surcharge like that would help drive, I think, lifestyle as well. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chairman Moffitt.
Thank you, and I thank you for being here from the department, and you can make your answers as brief as possible, and if I want more expanding, I'll ask you. Some of them I've written down some questions, and some have been partially answered. The answer to are your projected savings based upon agreed changes negotiated, and it's not. It's projected changes. Is that right? So that's not a locked-in savings.
Correct.
It's a projected savings. Thank you. Do you have here at the end, we mentioned on for non-smokers, and would the record show that Representative Kelly Burke has joined us? You mentioned the smoking rate for non-smokers different than smokers. Do you have in place a wellness program, an incentive for employees to maybe be within a certain margin of weight or whatever's the most beneficial? I mean, the biggest savings that can occur in health insurance is keep our people healthier. Are we doing anything to be proactive? Do we have any wellness programs in place?
We currently have wellness programs in place and disease management programs with our existing vendors. Last collective bargaining, we had a committee that was formed to pursue some wellness initiatives. Things have not been finalized there, but it again is on the table for this round of collective bargaining and one of our proposals to work together with the labor committee moving forward.
Okay, but you're definitely, it's on the radar screen.
Yes.
To do something to incentivize being proactive about health and taking steps that,
yes,
could help improve the outcomes. Any incentive in terms of maybe a better, less costly to the employee, whether, okay, that'd,
yes,
be part of it.
Yes,
that,
that's,
that
correct,
would be the incentive. You mentioned, one of you mentioned New Jersey plan. I had put in some changes that, were those negotiated or are they on a different system? Were they, did they have to negotiate those with their employees?
They were subject to negotiations for some of their employees, not necessarily to the extent here, but they were subject to negotiations.
Okay. The one thing I'd like to have you address is some of the changes that are being mentioned. I've heard discussions anyway. According to special notice in the Benefit Choice Options book, it states that premiums may be subject to an increase pending the outcome of ongoing legal dispute between the state and AFSCME, and that the premium increase may be applied retroactively to July 1st, 2016. Is that correct?
So that disclaimer is a result of the fact that the variables I mentioned before, where we don't have a ruling by the Labor Review Board, and it's a standard reservation of rights, so that going forward, we don't know how we're going to respond or what that final contract will look like, what it will allow. We have no intention right now of doing that, but we need to reserve our rights to be as flexible as possible once we get clarity on the collective bargaining agreement, once we get a budget, and so there's no decision one way or another whether we would pursue that, but it would be irresponsible for us not to reserve that right to make the best choice for the taxpayer and for the people, the members and the people of Illinois going forward.
And is it is July 1, 2016 as far back as it would go? Is that a correct?
That's correct.
So regardless of when an agreement was reached, but that would be part of the negotiations that would be spelled out in those?
I assume it would be spelled out in the agreements going forward.
Is that a common practice to have a retroactive premium payment?
I think it's common practice to reserve all the rights that are applicable.
Is it commonly implemented? Does it commonly become part of it?
I don't believe so here.
There's no precedent for it.
I would need to check with our legal counsel and get back, mm-hmm, to you, Chairman.
I mean, that could be a significant additional cost that is should be part of any negotiations, and so everyone knows what the cost-benefit ratios are.
And we do commit to open communication on all those issues to the extent allowable going forward.
It's my understanding that due to the budget impasse, CMS has indicated, and if anything I say is incorrect, just, you know, correct me, that CMS has indicated that no group health vouchers are eligible for the vendor payment program. Can you explain that and why?
The vendor payment program requires vouchers to be issued to the comptroller, which we're unable to do without appropriations. And so the vendor payment program has not been in effect since the beginning of fiscal year 16. We have instituted a vendor support initiative modeled after the vendor payment program that serves a similar purpose.
Okay, explain that just a little more. Vendor support program.
The vendor support initiative allows vendors to include healthcare carriers to assign receivables to a qualified purchaser, which are the same qualified purchasers that were laid out in the vendor payment program as enacted by statute.
How many vendors participate in the vendor support initiative in the program to purchase the outstanding receivables owed to providers in the group insurance program, and how were these vendors selected to be in that? According to reports received by the commission, one vendor is financing the entire $550 million currently being borrowed by providers. Is that correct?
The vendors who elect to participate in VSI are referred to the qualified purchasers. Right now, I know that most of our healthcare carriers do participate in one form or another. Blue Cross, Coventry, Fidelity, Health Alliance. And again, we work with all of our vendors to try and solve their unique and specific issues regarding non-timely payment.
So is there more than one vendor financing the entire 550 or the 550 million?
There are two main qualified purchasers.
And they're both actually actively participating?
Yes.
And they are?
VAP and VCF. VAP is, they're both vendors, they're both companies. And VAP accounts for the majority of that $550 million in healthcare assignments.
Who is Healthcare Finance LLC, and what is their relationship with CMS, if anything, if any?
I'm not aware of the details of Healthcare Finance LLC. However, we will certainly get those answers and get back to you.
Okay. Are one of the, none of you up there have that, or are you actually looking at the moment?
Representative, I believe Healthcare Finance, the that's the company working with Delta Dental, and I believe Delta Dental's program went into effect on March 15th, but I do not have a list of who the officers or agents of Healthcare Finance are. But that the first time that came on the radar, to my understanding, is when they started the Delta Dental program.
Okay. Letters have been sent by companies that have a contract with the state network providers indicating Healthcare Finance LLC would buy their unpaid receivables in exchange for assignment of the outstanding claims and interest. Are you aware of that?
So I just got some additional answers. VAP is actually Healthcare Finance. They have changed their name.
Okay.
So VAP is one of our qualified purchasers.
Healthcare Finance is now changed to what?
So VAP has changed to Healthcare Finance.
Okay.
And VAP is a qualified purchaser under the VSI program. However, as a private company, they also are engaging in programs with some of these vendors outside of the VSI program. And for those, CMS has no direct relationship on those non-VSI receivable assignment programs.
Okay, one additional question. Do the vendors in the VSI program make their returns, their profits, their money by borrowing at a much lower rate than the 9% and 12% that the state is required to pay under the current statutes? And do you know that the difference in the rates of VSI participants are able to borrow the funds at statutory rates the state is currently required to pay?
I don't know how these the qualified purchasers are paying for these receivables. That part of it is a private transaction by a private corporation. We are complying with the requirements of the Prompt Payment Act and the Timely Payment Act, and those numbers are, I believe, significantly higher than lending rates.
And I assume anybody that bids on programs, I assume you do due diligence in reviewing their past their credibility, their reliability, their dependability?
We do, and we have. And we have a very small pool of qualified purchasers that are allowed to participate in VSI. Those are the same qualified purchasers that were part of the vendor payment program that was put in by the last administration. And so they've gone through that due diligence.
Okay. At the moment, I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions from members? I just want to go back to one thing that Co-Chairman Moffitt brought up. You were talking about that special notice of the premiums going up, and they said you're waiting until there's a determination of where you go. Do you have the flexibility to say how those premiums, if they are retroactive, is that going to be by a lump sum payment, or do you have that flexibility to make it a phase-in payment if, in fact, the court decision goes that they have to pay it?
If it is implemented, then we would take the most responsible choice for our members, which would include phased-in payments.
Yeah. Thank you. Questions for members?
Chairman.
Real quick, just a few more follow-up. I wanted to make sure others got a chance to ask their questions. In October 2015, CMS issued an RFP for a custom benefit solution contract. How many responses did CMS receive for this RFP?
We only received one qualified response.
Why do you think CMS received only one response? Did you expect more than that? Was that any track record on that from past requests?
We certainly like to have as many competitors as possible. In this case, there was an accelerated timeline, and there was only one vendor that felt they were capable of doing this. Because of the uniqueness of having only one response, we vetted it very carefully, not only ourselves, but we used Deloitte on contract to take a look at their offer and their track record, and we feel very confident in the choice.
You said the timeline was a problem. Who set that?
We set the timeline. In order to achieve the most savings and have these plans choices available to our members in a timely fashion, we had to put accelerated timeline to execute this program.
But if that reduced bidders, maybe that's something to review in the future. If there's
if we were uncomfortable with this vendor and their option being the most cost effective and likely to succeed, we would not have awarded the contract.
As a result of this RFP, is it correct that CMS has contracted with, I believe is it Murnay? Chappell?
Morneau-Chappell.
Morneau-Chappell Limited, with headquarters in Canada, also an office in Chicago, is that correct?
I believe so.
And it's for 5 years with an option for five additional renewal?
So that's correct.
Potentially it's a 10-year contract? Can you outline for the commission the services of that bidder, what the services they will provide to the state of Illinois under this contract, and a general time frame for implementing full service custom benefit solutions for members of the group insurance program?
I'll ask Marcia, who's our program manager for that custom benefit solution program, to address that initially.
Our time frame for full implementation is September 1st of this year. We hope to have a microsite in August where we can do some testing and to give people a preview of what will be on the site, but it will be ready for September 1st rollout. Their responsibilities will include what we will do is we will verify eligibility at CMS. We're responsible for eligibility. We will maintain that. We will send that data to Morneau-Chappell. Morneau-Chappell will build decision-making tools through an interactive online experience and also offer online enrollment. They will have a customer service center where people can call in and actually enroll by phone. So you can enroll online or by phone. And those choices will be, we will have like more instructional videos, things that help people understand what a copayment is, what a deductible is. They'll be able to compare plans side by side and make their elections. And then Morneau will coordinate with us our data interfaces with our carriers and also with our payroll departments. And we will have a closed payroll loop that will go back and reconcile, what we collect versus what we bill. So we'll have a more robust reconciliation process moving forward for finance and audit purposes as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. One additional question. Two more. How much will Morneau-Chappell be paid for providing this custom benefit solution?
The estimate is about $9 to $10 million per year.
$9 to $10 million per year for how many years?
For 10 years. And then it'll be renegotiated under the guidelines of the contract as needed moving forward.
Okay, so it's, say that again, $10 million?
It's a per person per month fee, just like our administrative service charges are. And so it's based on our enrollees.
Your estimate was $10 million a year?
That's correct.
Cost for 10 years?
That's correct.
Well, it'll be five plus the five extension, mm-hmm, if we actualize,
right,
that option.
So basically $100 million estimate.
With some escalation, yes. I believe we have an estimate on the procurement bulletin.
So even to just break even, we've got to see savings in excess of $100 million just for that additional change,
over
right?
Over a 10-year period.
Over a 10-year period. Okay. Well, it's five and then a renewal. So
correct.
It's five probably for sure and possibly another five.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Is it likely that the third-party custom benefit solution contract will eventually reduce the staff currently in CMS Bureau of Benefits?
So that's a very good question, and I appreciate you bringing it up, Chairman. We have no intention of any layoffs associated with this project. The intent of the project is to make this additional choices easier for our members to choose the right option for them. It will relieve some of the administrative burden that's currently on the Bureau of Benefits, but I can promise you that Mike Manion is not going to come to me and say, I want to get rid of some people now. We're understaffed in that bureau right now, and there's plenty of highly value-added work that our talented employees can provide. We're simply automating a lot of the process. Currently, the amount of effort that goes into producing a paper book, the amount of cost of printing it, distributing it to the members, and then receiving a mass amount of questions because it's, you know, things are not necessarily as clear on paper as they can be in this interactive model with decision-making tools on there. We may indeed see attrition. We know that there's a good portion of our staff who are eligible for retirement in the coming years, but we do not intend any layoffs associated with this project or contract.
Do you foresee or project different levels offered, different options, like a lot of times on insurance, you're talking gold, bronze, silver options or programs? Do you see that being offered a package that maybe is not there now, or there would be a variety of options?
I'll refer to Mike, but yes, so the intent of this is to give multiple options, more options to our members at different.
And what I'm really getting at, where do you see the savings really occurring? It's not going to be from any change in staff. I mean, I'm just. This additional $100 million, obviously, we hope brings some savings of some kind somewhere.
Absolutely, and the different plan designs is where a chunk of that, up to $400 million per year, will come from.
Just what I said, the different plans that would be available.
Also, in addition, moving forward, we'll be able to focus more fully on reconciling. We can put more effort into making sure we're collecting from the right funds, and so we'll be able to focus more on collecting from different funds, making sure that GRF isn't by default absorbing costs that could be more accurately allocated to a payroll, so we can probably leverage savings there. Also, we have some systems at BIX that will be fading away in place of the Morneau-Chapelle, so there's some BIX and some statistical services costs that will shift, and so that will cover probably half of the cost there. So moving forward, and as these jobs evolve, we will get savings down the road.
And do you see a shift in what employees pay? There will be a change there?
Depending on the outcome of labor negotiations, okay. that share, the ultimate share of what's determined will be the split between the employer and the employee.
Okay. Mr. Chairman? Co-chair?
Further questions from the members? Saying none, thank you very much. And thank you, and possibly Marsha, someone, if you can sort of hang around just in case we have some questions.
Okay.
Okay. And if not, the director.
Absolutely, please. We'll stay around. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Going forward, the vendor assistance program, the vendor supportive, Brian Hines. Brian, how you doing? So did you make the right decision? Are you in the right business or what? Okay. So tell us what's going on. Can you turn your mic on, please?
Sorry. Chairman Trotter and Chairman Moffitt, thank you very much. My name is Brian Hines. I'm the co-founder of Vendor Assistance Program, LLC. It's a company we co-founded in 2010 to work with state vendors who couldn't withstand the long payment cycles. Under the state's vendor payment program, which was promulgated by rule by JCAR in 2010, we were the first company to agree to the terms and become a qualified purchaser, and we've been a qualified purchaser under that program ever since. While that program has been suspended due to the budget impasse, we are also a qualified purchaser under the state's vendor support initiative. To date, we've purchased a little over $1.1 billion of receivables. Through the vendor payment program and the vendor support initiative, we purchase receivables of all sizes, large and small, everything from a $3 or $4 receivable to a receivable in excess of $40 million. Much like you, legislators, we're on the front line of this, dealing with vendors every day that are in crisis, taking their calls, listening to them, and trying to, if they qualify, fund them. And to date, anyone who's qualified, large or small, we've been able to finance and do everything from, you know, save their or make, help them make payroll and do whatever else. And again, I'm sure those are calls that you are also you know, getting in your offices from constituents and vendors. It came up in the CMS presentation. We're also, separate from what we do in the vendor payment program, the vendor supported initiative, we have spent the last 18 months working with the administrators of the different health care plans that where the doctors and hospitals do not qualify for prompt payment penalty and therefore do not qualify for the vendor payment program or vendor supported initiative. And it's that's the issue with healthcare finance. So what we did in that is we set up a separate company. It's the same owners, the same people, the same employees. But to avoid confusion between the vendor payment program and what we're doing there, we renamed the company. And we're working directly with the administrators. HealthLink and Delta Dental are the first two that we're working with. And this week we'll make our first purchases of receivables under that program. Buying all of the for doctors and hospitals for that are administered by HealthLink that are in their network. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Co-chairman?
Some of it, you said kind of general terms, and I appreciate you being here and your explanation. Yeah. I think you said the smallest was $3.
Yes. That
you, I assume it's just a package, right?
Yes.
Just a package that all sizes are in that.
But, that's correct, right.
Yeah. Can you explain for the commission how the vendor support initiative works, which anything expanded a little more, and how you interact with providers of health services to the state? And you, one of them was, you know, initially it didn't apply to doctors, right, and hospitals, and some changes have been made, and just anything else you can further explain that, how you interact and how it further works.
Sure. The initial program, the vendor payment program, was promulgated by rule by JCAR, and that those rules, which then, you know, set out who could be a qualified purchaser, and again we were the first one to accept those rules. Called for that program was governed jointly by CMS and by the Comptroller's Office. Without a budget, there's no and the terms, the terminology that's used in there, a lot of it is terminology that's used by the Comptroller's Office. So those terms in that program were unworkable without a budget, because the invoices weren't being sent over to the Comptroller's Office. So the state then, the CMS, working with the different agencies, put together this temporary program, the Vendor Support Initiative, where we're buying the receivables without, we're buying them by getting confirmation that these are invoices for work performed by healthcare providers or by the insurance companies, the HMOs of the state, and buying them before they go to the Comptroller's Office. Your second question. So then, with the medical providers, the most of the medical providers that work in the open access plans, they don't qualify for prompt payment penalty because they work through the different administrators, Cigna, HealthLink, et cetera. So we've been working with the administrators for close to 2 years to try and figure out a way to buy those. Again, we're not buying receivables that are vouchered by the comptroller, or we're not buying receivables that the agency has seen. Again, the administrators are the ones that are basically the paying agent for the state. So we've worked with them for, again, like I said, close to 2 years to figure out ways that our system can integrate with theirs so we can buy those receivables based on the information that we're provided by the administrators.
I appreciate your response. It's learning lots here. According to our records, your company is currently financing, we had $550 million with state providers. Just, is that close to correct?
That's close to correct, yes.
And is that a record for your company?
Yes, it's the highest we've had, yes.
Yes. What impact, if any, does the lack of a budget for group insurance have on your program?
you know, it's
that you would want to mention.
No, it's again, as I mentioned, we're on the front line along with legislators. You know, we're getting calls every day. We're getting calls from people who would like to see a budget passed. We're getting calls from people that can't make payroll, and we're helping them make payroll.
Mm-hmm. Important function.
Thank you.
Really keeping it rolling. For now, that's all. Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Kelly.
A common mistake.
I'm sorry.
At least you didn't call me Dan.
Moving around.
So just a couple of questions about the business. So you've got $550 million in receivables that you're working on. What is the source of financing? Where's the money coming that you're providing to the vendors?
We have two lines of credit, one with Citibank and one with Bank of America.
Okay. And then the debts that you've purchased that aren't eligible for prompt payment, how do you make money on those?
Well, so we haven't, and we're just starting the program
still working
now.
On it.
We're making the first purchase this Friday, and those qualify for timely payment penalties. So
okay.
Again, our business, we don't factor. We pay the vendors 100% of what they're owed, and all we get is the penalty. So it's no additional cost to the state because the state would either make this penalty payment to the vendors or to us, and the vendors get 100% of the invoice amount.
And the timely payment kicks in after?
Day 30.
Day 30, okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions of members? I've really appreciated
your
information. It's been very helpful. Obviously, we're all sorry we're in the situation that we're at, but it's an important function there that you're performing. Did you answer? We ask on the ones that are this last group. What rate of interest are you able to collect on that?
It's 0.75% per month.
0.75 per month.
Right.
Okay, Representative Davidsmeyer.
Just a quick question. How do people find you?
Well, there's the state on the website when the vendor payment program was operational, they found us. They could find us through that. And we also have marketed to every vendor of the state of Illinois under the vendor payment program, vendor support initiative. Under the new programs, we're working with the administrators. And so HealthLink and Delta Dental have sent notices to all their doctors, hospitals, providers, dentists to tell them about us. And we'll work with the other administrators if they want to work with us.
So you're on the state's website, CMS, or?
Well, correct, but that program has been suspended.
Okay, so has that link on the website been dropped then, since that program is no longer there?
No, it's still there, and again, we also market every vendor who has a contract. People haven't had a difficulty finding us, but it still is there, but that program is suspended, and the Vendor Support Initiative is like the interim program.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is I still get people calling me saying, absolutely. What do I do?
Right.
Small businesses that are, you know, going to live or die on $4,000. So
they can absolutely call us, and those are the ones that, again, we the calls we get when it's, if we don't have money by Wednesday, we're not going to make payroll. Those are the calls that our my employees love to take.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the committee have questions? I have one final question. How many employees do you have?
We have 13 employees, and then some are partners in the company also.
Mm-hmm. And your main office, again?
In Chicago, yes.
Thank you. Turn it back to Co-Chair, Senator Trotter.
Thank you very much, seeing there's no further questions. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have the renewed and amended contracts for, if we could have, Quality Care Health Plans, Cigna, come forward. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Robertson. I'm National Account Executive for Cigna Healthcare. Pleased to be here this morning to answer any questions you might have of Cigna.
Can you sort of tell us, so what do you provide?
We're a self-administered quality care health plan, and we offer a PPO-type plan for the state of Illinois employees.
Yeah. Co-Chairman.
Can you outline how the current budget impasse and claim payment backlog is impacting your business?
We are currently working, we currently have issues with providers and are working through those. The backlog means that we are processing claims and we're keeping them in a hold and holding them until such time as we receive funding to release them. So it does pose a burden for our providers, our contracted providers and our non-contracted providers, and also for State of Illinois members, because we aren't unable to release payment at this time.
How old is the oldest claim that you have that you're working on?
It might be easier if I reply to you in terms of days. Currently, for the contracted providers, we're holding 15 months worth of claims.
15 months would be the oldest?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you do you participate in the program known as Vendor Support Initiative?
The Vendor Support Initiative program, we do not currently, since we're a self-administered plan.
Not, okay.
Our fees, Cigna made a business decision not to pursue that for our fees. We are currently working with Brian and his team on a solution for provider payments.
And in the big picture, the, I mean, waiting 15 months, I mean, when things come up for bid, just in the big picture, obviously we've become a less attractive entity to want to bid on business, probably.
We've managed a relationship with the state now for going on almost 15 years, so we still enjoy the partnership with the state.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
Questions from members? Leader Stevenson.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you just handle do the administrative of the claim, so, you know, you're not out on the claims side of it. Are your administrative costs are you current on being paid on the administrative side?
No, we are not.
Okay. How far behind are you on the administrative side?
We're currently owed a little over $5 million on our administrative fees.
And what kind of time frame does that represent?
About 6 months.
About 6 months of. Okay. And because you're administrative contract, you know, you don't qualify then for the prompt pay or additional costs for that, your administrative side, or do you?
We do qualify for that.
You do
yes.
qualify for
mm-hmm.
that?
We do.
Okay. Is there a concern from your company's reputation standpoint? Obviously, the public doesn't know that you just do the administration. You're not paying the claims. Do you take all the heat for when claims aren't being paid, or the heat from your providers that are in your network?
We do take a lot of heat. I think we share it equally with the state. Internally, in the state of Illinois, most providers understand the situation and are more understanding of that, whereas outside, we have a national network. Outside of the state, it becomes a little more difficult.
Now, your network of physicians, if you're in a Cigna network, then are they required to be in the state's network as well? Physicians can't choose to stay in your network but get out of the state's network
with
you?
They ask for that. They do ask for that, but we've so far been able to convince them that they're better off staying in network because we pay those claims on a they're paid on a 15-month basis, whereas out-of-network claims are paid a little bit longer than that. So,
out-of-network is longer than that period of time.
Correct.
And that during that whole period of time, then, there's no EOBs that are sent to the employee or to the employer?
No. As we process claims and place them in the hold, we do remit an EOB to the member and to the provider to let them know that payment is forthcoming and what the payment is that they can expect.
Okay. So they are receiving that, so they know what their portion is, so they can be paying their portion of it. And it's just the state's portion, then, that would not be paid yet.
That is correct.
And there's no problem with it, with the claims exceeding 12 months, that it doesn't fall into some pool that you have to go to the in the past, I thought if we had expenses that left more than 12 months, that it fell into a different category of payments. But in this case, it doesn't. So, right? So
no, it does not.
Okay. All right. I think that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? I do have one. And it's a procedural question, and I'm asking it to all the vendors that are coming for us today. Do you have any pending regulatory issues with any state agency, or are you under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state attorney general's office? And if so, would like you to make a statement at this time?
None that I'm aware of at this time.
Oh, okay. That's good enough. And again, it's not just you.
I understand. No, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next from HMOs, we're going to have first, actually, if all three can come up, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Alliance, and Coventry. And good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Chairman, mm-hmm. and members of the Commission. I'm Mike Brady. I've represented Blue Cross for probably 30 years. And I'm here today because you've requested information about our HMO plan.
Correct.
I'll forego the intro about Blue Cross and what we do with all the different products, but since we're dealing strictly with the HMO, we cover 64,000 people approximately, state employees and family members. And due to the lack of appropriation, we entered into the Vendor Support Initiative, and by doing that have been able to sustain servicing all those members at the same time paying the providers and hospitals in a timely manner. Basically, we have, through Vendor Services Initiative, given them receivables totaling $315 million. Outstanding, probably, in receivables. Beyond that, Blue Cross probably has $150 million. So that's the ballpark or the gender we're dealing with. Because of Vendor Support Initiative, we have been able to sustain servicing the employees and their members. Because as you can see, that's quite a bit of money, and I don't know if we'd have been able to go on much longer. In the HMO, of course, we pay it all directly so that there's no lag, so that the Blue Cross is paying out that money regardless of whether they get the receivable in or not. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions from the members? Bill Chairman. Leader Severson.
Just one quick question. Has your, I know on the exchanges, your network has dramatically reduced. Has your network changed at all now under the group plan, or do you have the same?
The same
broad
network. The same network that we always had is still available under the group plan.
Okay, so it's your broad network, not the network.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman?
Thank you. Just formality.
Sure.
You all heard it. You're all being asked the same question, not singling you out. So if you, in your testimony, would respond. If any vendors have pending regulatory issues with any state agency or are under investigation by the Illinois Attorney General or any other state attorney general's office, please state that during your testimony. And it's not...
No.
But we're just on the record if each of you would
nothing.
State.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take it. Thank you. Health Alliance? Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Sinead Rice Madigan, and I'm the Vice President for Government Business Lines for the Health Plan. We're happy to be a longstanding partner with the State of Illinois Central Management Services for two products. We're on the agenda twice, so for the opportunity to keep this moving, I will talk briefly about the Group Insurance Active and Retiree plan that we have. Health Alliance has 79,000 members and the active employees and 1,200 in 48 counties for the state retiree plan as a Medicare Advantage plan. We have no AG inquiries at this time, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we're happy to answer the questions about the VAP. So I brought my Senior Vice President, Lori Cowdery-Benso, to talk about that.
Hi, good morning. Similar to Blue Cross Blue Shield, we also participate in the VSI program. We also participate because the state is about 16 months behind in our payments. We have over $700 million outstanding. We have sold approximately $166 million through the VSI. So I'd be happy to answer any questions in regard to the outstanding receivables.
Any members have any questions? Just stating it, how much outstanding, 16?
Well, $166 million we've sold through VSI to two of the vendors through VAP and also VCF.
Do you have anything else?
No further questions of you, so next, please. And just to remind the members, we do have two actionable items that we have to be voting on. So if you have to go, then we will find leave to open up the roll call to do so.
Good morning. I'm Frank D'Antonio. I'm the market president for Coventry Aetna in Missouri and Illinois.
Let's start with, are you under investigation?
That's what I was going to say. After I said who I was, no, there are no inquiries
okay,
from the
so there, there's nothing under investigation by the Attorney General or any other entity in the state. Thank you, sir.
Sure. To my left is Davin Reineke. He is our Chief Financial Officer for Missouri and Illinois. Coventry Aetna, and actually maybe for efficiencies in the, of the hearing here, we're on the agenda three different times. We offer our HMO, which is fully insured. We offer an open access plan, which is self-funded under the Coventry names. And we also offer a Medicare Advantage, which you have listed here as Aetna. Overall, we service over 33,000 state employees and their families. We are about, collectively, across all of our plans, about $230 million behind in premium. That does not include the self-funded payments. We do participate in the vendor assistance plan program for our fully insured premiums on the HMO and our self-insured admin fees under the OAP plan. With that, I'll open up to any questions.
Leader Sears.
Just one question. It won't have any effect on this year. The merger with Humana, what is the, when will that, when will we see any kind of change in either network issues or contracts, or will that have any effect in this contract year, or will it be yet more than a year away before that would occur?
So until the acquisition is finalized and, you know, completed, we operate as two separate companies. So we are not at a point yet that we know when the deal is going to close. But assuming that it closes this year, there should be no impact to networks for this current contract year, either on the HMO OAP program or even the Medicare Advantage. I would say from the Medicare Advantage perspective as well, there would be no changes in 17. The earliest would be 18.
Now, have the feds approved that merger yet?
No.
Oh, because you don't have even
no.
the approval yet on the feds.
Yeah.
Is there any idea when that's going to be ruled on?
Well, I was going to ask you. No.
Okay.
Internally, we may be speculating in the fall, but we really don't know.
Okay, so we wouldn't see anything to this year. So
yes.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Sorry about that. Yes, Representative Davis-Meyer. Representative Davis-Meyer has asked leave to open up the roll call. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah, I'll make a motion. Or do we have two actionable items?
We have two, correct.
Can we open both at the same time?
State on the record that you want to be voted.
Yeah.
You're voting aye.
I want to vote. I want to
Right.
You make a motion to vote aye on both.
There's no opposition, so leave has been granted for you to vote aye on the two actionable items that are becoming before us.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for members?
I do. One question.
Chairman.
Thank you. Just if you could, very briefly, I specifically haven't addressed this, at least I didn't hear it, how the current budget impasse and claim payment backlog is impacting your business. Just, I mean, anything you want to comment there?
Okay, so I'll give a general comment, and I'll let Devin talk more specific numbers. The bottom line is it hasn't helped. So when we're looking at, you know, working with providers, you know, our number one call into our provider services area is complaints with payment. So it's made it, you know, difficult from that perspective. Have we lost any providers at this point because of the budget impasse and the slow pay? The answer is overall no. But one of the cautions that I have that I worry about for all of our members is if we do have one or two providers, you know, in a certain area, especially a more rural county, especially as we're starting to look at our Medicare population, and CMS nationally has more become more strict in their network adequacy requirements. My worry is we may have a provider or two that may leave, you know, our network or any provider's network because they're not being paid and not participate in any of the government programs, whether it's the state of Illinois plan or even, you know, Medicare across the board. And then what that does, in my opinion, is the concern is that we have a spiraling effect that potentially we'll see more and more providers then getting out. And so we can't offer in those counties because we don't meet the network adequacy requirements.
So it hasn't happened yet, but a real possibility, it's a threat or a fear. Or concern, maybe
it's
a concern.
It's an absolute concern of mine,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I do have one more question. Did you want to respond any on that?
No, other than commenting, you know, from a total liability perspective, once again, to Frank's point, you know, we're about $230 million in arrears as it pertains to the state payment to us for fully insured services. Obviously, there are also, you know, the pending claims that he commented on. When you're talking about the state HMO plan, just to go along with the other providers and their responses. You know, we're currently
speaking to the microphone a little more, please.
We're currently about $33 million behind in terms of the HMO. That equates to about 8 months of premium. We see similar lines on the Medicare side of things as well. And, you know, an ASO, we're about $4 million behind, and that equates to 8 months as well. You know, once again, the biggest challenge is on the self-insured side, where we are pending claims currently for about 12 months prior to paying them.
Okay, one additional question, my last one. Some of the vendors who have a contract to providers health services to the state have sent letters to their network providers indicating that a program offered through Healthcare Finance LLC would buy the unpaid receivable from the state in exchange for assignment of the outstanding claims and interest to Healthcare Finance LLC. Have you sent such a letter to your provider network?
No. We are in the process of working through discussions and the details of that program. But, yes, we have not done that yet.
Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Would you like us to stay here for the Coventry OAP?
Certainly.
Okay. So.
Right.
No.
Are they
question.
Under investigation for anything?
No, sir.
Then good. Just stay right there then.
Okay.
Fine. Both of you?
Yes.
On front OPs? Right. So
give us a little piece. This is the second part of what Coventry Aetna offers to the state employees is our open access plan. And same holds true, again, all combined. We have about 33,000, over 33,000 state employees and their families, members that are covered by our plans. We do not participate in the vendor assistance program from a claims payment perspective on the OAP side, but we do from a administrative services fee perspective.
Thank you. Questions from the members? Same answers, and you basically answered them as well. Is that someone from HealthLink as well that's here? Thank you. The obligatory procedural question, are you under investigation by Attorney General's office?
We are not.
Good. Thank you.
My name is Susan Laney. I'm with HealthLink. I have been on the account for 15 years, and we continually work with CMS and try to find cost savings and work with wellness programs as well. I'm here to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Delighted to hear the wellness programs. Just real brief, what do you do on in the wellness programs?
Well, when we talk about wellness programs, we have preventative guidelines. We send out notification to the members about the immunizations that they need to have, the routine physicals that they should have every year. And we talk about the different pieces from a condition management, if they have diabetes, what they need to be doing, and all the different pieces. So we send out brochures all the time for them.
Okay, real important thing, and that's where we can have some real cost savings. A few years ago, I took off 100 pounds. After that, I got a call from one of the groups that have testified here today, wanted to know if they could help me manage my weight. And I asked him, well, maybe I could help you. And so we had quite a little discussion. I thank them, though. It's important, and I mean, it is huge, trying to be positive about that. Can you outline how the current budget impasse and claim payment backlog is impacting your business?
Well, it impacts us because of the members. We receive approximately 800 calls a day, about 4,000 calls a week, and a lot of those are someone sending them to collection or someone's asking them to pay up front. We do get involved with that. We call our network representatives who reach out to providers and ask them to please work with us and to take the member out of collections. So we handle that on a regular basis. What that also does is that when we're trying to negotiate new contracts, new discounts, that does affect when they're not being paid, and also trying to get new providers in our system.
So, very really, that's a good specific. I really appreciate that. Do you currently you do participate? Are you in the vendor support initiative?
We are not from a standpoint of our administrative fees, but we do work with healthcare finance for our providers. We did send out letters to our providers notifying them about this opportunity that they have that is strictly up to them if they want to work with healthcare finance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Yunus requests leave to vote aye on the upcoming measures. Thank you very much. Seeing no opposition. Next, we have other providers, Magellan and Delta Dental.
Good morning. My name is Julie Billingsley, and I'm a senior account executive with Magellan Healthcare. Magellan is not under investigation by the Attorney General's office or any other state agency, and we have no pending regulatory issues. Magellan administers the Employee Assistance Program for the non-AFSCME Council 31 employees, as well as the Behavioral Health Program for the Quality Care Health Plan. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can you outline specifically what the current budget impasse and claim payment backlog, how it's impacting your business? Any specifics you'd like to mention?
Sure. Magellan has made the decision to continue to process claims in a timely manner, so we pre-fund the claims. Currently, there is about a $4 million backlog in outstanding receivables for the claims funding, as well as $2 million for administrative fees. We felt that if we held claims payment, it would create a potential hardship for our providers, which could impact access to care. So we've continued to pay claims.
So you use the term self-funded.
Correct.
To get the payments made in a timely manner.
Yeah, we Magellan make when we process claims, Magellan actually funds the claims, and then the state will reimburse us.
And did you say what that volume is up to? You may have stated
we're at $4 million.
$4 million, okay. Mm-hmm. And do you participate in that program, vendor support?
No, we do not.
Because you're self-funded, that really takes...
The state is self-funded. We're administering the...
Right, self-funded. Need it, yeah.
Pardon me?
We were just clearing that up from a standpoint. I mean, you're self-funding. You're not. That's
correct.
Why it's really not needed in your case. Do you foresee being able to continue to do this? We don't know for how long, but I hope it can continue if needed.
You know,
I hope it's not needed.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, it's not something we can continue forever. We do hold out hope that the budget impasse will find a resolution soon. But at this point, we don't have, not made any determinations as to whether, you know, on a drop dead date.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Yes, come forward.
Good morning. I'm Stacy Bond. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Delta Dental in Illinois, and this is my colleague, Darren Avant, the Senior Account Manager dedicated to the state. Currently, we cover 200,000 employees and another 200,000 of dependents. Delta Dental's administrative fee is 18 months in arrears. Our oldest network claim is from June of 2015, and our oldest non-network claim is from March of 2015. I'm unaware of any AG or other investigation with the company. We are currently working with Healthcare Finance on behalf of our dentists. We are not for our administrative fee. As noted earlier, we have in fact solicited our dentists and made them aware of this opportunity so that they can address their personal situations. The impact on the company is currently sustainable from an admin fee perspective. Like others, we're not sure how long the impasse may last, so we may need to revisit that decision going forward. The impact on our network dentists and those outside of the network, though, is really variable, dependent upon the number of state employees that they serve. So from rather modest to profound. Other impacts to the company are state employees calling and blaming
services of claims back in October 2014. It is a concern of ours how long this delay will continue to go on. We have received phone calls from retirees, of course, who are concerned if we're going to continue to pay their claims. Our business decision has been to continue to pay claims. We want to make sure the retirees at this point in their life stage do not have to worry about if their claims are going to be paid or not. We would like the opportunity, though, to continue to work with the state to help and assist with this budget pass or the delay in premium payments if we possibly can. So I would be happy to answer any specific questions.
Any, either of our members, other members? None? Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Nisha Williams. I'm the account executive from Humana. I manage the state's account with us. Humana is an HMO option that is offered to the state's retirees in 13 counties. Currently, we cover about 4,300 members. Humana is not under investigation by the Attorney General or has any regulatory issues. We do not participate in the vendor assistance program. As United mentioned, we are a fully insured plan, so our claims have continued to pay as normal. We are currently about 13 months behind in premium payments. And, you know, as with the other carriers, this has had a financial impact on our plan, and and it does impact our decision-making process and any future partnerships that we have with the state.
Thank you. Any questions from either of our members? Okay. We thank you for being here. Appreciate it. So now it's just other providers as listed on the agenda. If you'd come forward. Thank you for being here. If you would state your name and who you're representing, and then bring us up to date on any investigations that are or are not occurring.
I'm Eric Bloom. I'm the account executive for CVS Caremark. We are the pharmacy benefit manager for the state of Illinois, and we have no inquiries from the Attorney General or other entities within the state. We have been with the state since July 1st of 2015. We cover about 171,000 members, obviously providing pharmacy benefit services to those members that are in the Coventry HealthLink and Cigna plans. We do pay all of our claims up front, given the nature of the pharmacy business, and currently the state AR is about $188 million since July 1st.
And you just started, and you were a new vendor, or new provider then? On
correct.
You just recently won in July, then you started with the state.
So between administrative fees and actual pharmacy claims, we're just short of $190 million in ARs.
It's been everything you expected it to be. either of my colleagues have any questions? I think they've covered it, haven't they? Wait. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Kurt Baugh. I represent ConnectiCare. I'm the relationship manager. Here today, we manage the flexible spending accounts, the MCAP and DCAP plans for the state. We're currently in our second year of providing that administration. Our company is not currently under investigation by the state or any other attorney generals.
Can you comment any as payment cycle budget issues impacted you, and if so, how?
Not directly. Our administrative payments from the state are being made, as well as we receive daily funding from the state to cover the claims that would be on behalf of the state members.
Okay. Either of you have, Senator?
What's your the number of employees involved, or how much is the headcount of those taking advantage of the flex plans?
Under the medical, under the MCAP plan, a little over 14,000, and under the dependent care, just about 1,800.
Okay. Percentage-wise, that's a pretty small number.
It is a pretty small number. I think with the medical one, I mean, they are use it or lose it plans, so I think people are naturally hesitant. In the past year, there's been a rollover option that the government has provided, so up to $500 of unused funds can roll over. Any amounts that are unused above that forfeit.
So this contract does include that the full rollover provision, not just the 90-day, but you have the full.
It does.
Rollover.
It does have the $500 for the current year. The provision has been changed slightly. Last year, all the $500, even if you did not enroll in the plan for the current year, but going into 2017, if the member does not enroll in the plan for 2017, the rollover benefit is not provided.
Okay. Should there be a better? I mean, this is really a no-brainer, a significant savings for the employees as well as the employer. But
right.
Should there be a better outreach or education process to employees to get better utilization of this?
I think there certainly could be ongoing efforts. I think the state does make an effort. There are videos that are provided and documentation, and it's definitely promoted at all the different benefit fairs. So I think there are efforts being made to do that. I think some people are hesitant because, again, they don't want to potentially lose money, hard-earned money. And then also I think some people get frustrated because there are times when they have to provide substantiation documentation, and people don't like to do that. The comments that we get back are not always that favorable. They view it as their money, and they shouldn't have to provide any documentation of that. So people's cards get suspended. So currently about, I think what the number here, there are quite a few cards that are suspended. Almost 1,300 cards, payment cards, suspended. People can still file claims. They just have to do it through the website or send paper in. But they have a card, and if they go to swipe it, it's frozen until they either provide the documentation or repay the claim.
Well, that's one problem, I guess, with using the card for non-prescription.
right.
basis.
For prescriptions, it works very easy. Copays, it substantiates automatically. Actually, about 90% of the claims automatically substantiate. So the percentage is pretty small. But, you know, right now there are, you know, about $748,000 of the claims that need documentation for people whose cards have been suspended.
Okay. And but yeah, and under the prescription side, it's great. Obviously, those who do that,
absolutely.
It's seamless, and it's really a great benefit. So,
yeah. I think on the dependent care side, I don't know exactly what the threshold is, but there's a point at which it's more beneficial for lower-income people to use the deduction on their income taxes as opposed to using, you know, our plan. And I don't know exactly what that dollar income threshold is. And then additionally, dependent care claims, they can only be paid, you know, from you actually have to have money, you know, in the account deducted, whereas the medical side, you can use it all from day one. With a dependent care, you have to wait until it's funded. And some people, you know, have difficulty waiting between payrolls. You know, they have to pay their daycare provider up front, and they don't want to wait 2 weeks to get their money back. So,
and again, hopefully on the education standpoint, they are giving that out, you know, as a rule of thumb. If your income is above this, this could be advantageous to you. If your income is below that,
I don't know what the education is provided on that point from the state. I can't speak to that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator. And either representative have a further question? Representative Nekritz or Representative Burke? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you.
And IMED, right? If you'd come forward. And is there anyone else under this category? I think this concludes this category.
Yes.
So go ahead and state your name and who you're representing.
I'm Hazelton with IMED Vision Care. I'm a senior sales executive there, and we are happy to have been with the state for many years now. We just entered into a five-year renewal cycle last year in July of 2015. We're not in any litigation or any ongoing claims issues.
No investigation by the Attorney General? Okay.
No plan changes in the last two fiscal years.
Can you just, has the budget impasse had an impact on your business?
It has not, but we are participating in your vendor support.
Okay. Any of the other members? Some of the vendors have a contract to providers health services to the state, have sent letters to their network providers indicating that a program offered through Healthcare Finance LLC would buy any unpaid receivables from the state in exchange for assignment of the outstanding claims and interest to Healthcare Finance LLC. Have you sent such a letter? Does that impact you, or is that anything you're involved with to your provider network?
Yes, we have sent the letter.
You have sent letters? Is that what?
Yes.
So you are, you've informed your providers of that?
Yes.
What has been the response? How many looked into it, taken it up? Do you know? Letters have been sent, but you don't know what the response has been.
I don't know what the response has been.
Okay. Anything else? We thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else present that we've overlooked for testifying? Then at this time we have two procedural votes. If it would be okay, I'll read them together if that would be all right. No objection. And the first is approval of the group insurance contracts being renewed or amended for FY 2017 and pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5. I make the motion to approve the proposed renewed and amended versions of the following contracts for FY 17: Cigna, Magellan, Delta Dental, and Minnesota Life. If we do them together, then also group insurance contracts being renewed or amended for FY 2017 pursuant to the same place in the statute, 5 ILCS 375/5, I make a motion to approve the proposed renewed and amended versions of the following managed care contracts for FY 17: Blue Advantage HMO, HMO Illinois, Health Alliance HMO, Coventry HMO, Coventry OAP, and HealthLink OAP. Is there a motion to adopt both of those? Anyone move that? Moved by Senator Severson, a second. Do we need a roll call on that? We probably do. It's the clerk. And then we want to acknowledge those that have asked to be entered as leave. So if the clerk would call the remaining ones that are still here.
Senator Althoff. Representative Burke.
Yes.
Representative Davidsmeyer. Senator Kaler. Representative Moffitt.
Aye.
Representative Nekritz.
Yes.
Representative Riley. Senator Rose. Senator Staines. Senator Severson.
Yes.
Senator Trotter. Representative Yunus.
And again, I say several of those had indicated
yes.
by leave, and they were granted, and as well as Senator Staines had asked
she
that.
Okay.
Yeah, so that would be, should ask Senator Trotter. Reminder that the next meeting is May 3rd, room C1, 9:30, and that will be regarding the proposed closure of Kewaunee. I want to thank COGFA staff for their excellent help and our members. And with that, we're adjourned.